to the right, that does not cut. Cold deer.
Okay, I will lead prayers. Sashi puki chichi sacha rira vinshi hinde genpadi sangi shingu nite uwagi choku nanda shingla chikashu hiranguru ana mandala sami Sangye Churam Sati Chaknama Jamshu Vardu Rati Kyatsu Chi Sati Shinyen Dike Tsunaki Chola Penshi Sangye Chukarshu Sangye Churam Sati Chaknama Jamshu Vardu Dati Kyatsu Chi Dati Chinyin Dipe Tsunanki Chola Penshi Sangye Jukashu Sangye Churam Sati Chakdanla Jamshu Vardu Dati Kyatsu Chi Dati Chinyin Dipe Tsunanki Chola Penshi Sangye Jukashu. And then we'll start with a meditation. Feel your mind letting go of any thoughts that it's holding on to. And your awareness lands in your physical body. And you can feel some sense of relaxation just by doing that. Bring your focus to the crown of your head. And just casually, slowly scan down your body. See what stress or tension you come across and linger wherever you need to. Scanned all the way down, then reverse. reverse direction, standing up. Stand all the way up, then land on your breath. Feel how your whole chest moves with the breath. Really firmly on the breath for the last few moments. And then gently let it go. Start to expand your focus. Move your body when you're ready. And make a dedication. a little clipper, but the that little black box, there's the clipper for the flag.
Oh.
In there. And I think it's also there. Did you press that one button on the keyboard? Maybe that one will work. Yeah, it looks a little different. Let's see what it does. Yeah, it's fine though.
Okay.
It's very temperamental. It is pretty hot in here today too, but it was worse yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And poor Venerable Tenzin, like, you know, she has, like, robes that look very heavy, too. Okay. So we're on death and the realms of existence. What's next? The deep dive into death and rebirth. And it's class 9, Wednesday, June 20th. 2018. So tonight, what we're going to talk about is really cool. We're going to talk about meditation on the awareness of death, and this is part one, so we'll finish it up next week. We're just going to jump right in. Let's say Chiwa Mitakpa.
Chiwa
Mitakpa.
Chiwa Mitakpa.
So Chiwa is death, Mitakpa is impermanence. And then another way to say it is Chiwa Drumpa Gompa.
Chiwa Drumpa Gompa.
Chiwa Drumpa Gompa.
Chiwa Drumpa
Gompa. So Chiwa again is death. Drempa, remember, and Gompa is meditation. So you'll hear, like when you're on retreat, the meditation hall is referred to as the Gompa. So that's where that comes from. And this is a special section of the Lamrim Chenmo, which is the greatest book ever written in the Tibetan language, probably. And do you know who wrote it? There's a tanka of him in this room. The founder of the Galupa lineage.
The first alignment. No.
Okay.
I don't know.
Starts with J.
Jay Tsongkhapa.
Yes. Jay Tsongkhapa. And so really this means death awareness habituation. Gompa can mean to get used to something as well, so getting used to death awareness. And death awareness habituation, we're not talking about a formal seated meditation. We're talking about doing this through the whole day, throughout your whole day. Chiwa Drenpa, to say Chiwa Drenpa, that means you're going to die today. And so the point of this practice is to feel or to know that you're going to die today. That's the point of it. So if we know we're going to die today, then what would we be doing right now? Would we act the same? Would we be doing the same thing? Would we say the same thing? Would we be here? What would we be doing? And I kind of think it's more... So what Geshe Michael says is the thought that goes through your mind right now, that's the point of the whole 10-week class. I'm going to die to... I'm going to die tonight. I know I'm going to die tonight. Having that sort of habituation towards death every single day. And one day we'll be right, because we will die at some point. But I think it's kind of, for me, it's more helpful to think of, not like if I knew I was going to die today, what would I do? Because then we kind of think like, I quit my job and I go see my family right now and like, you know, we just think like those sorts of things. But I think it's more helpful like, how would I act if I knew I was going to be dying today? Because it may not be the best idea to just quit our job and, you know, like ditch all the responsibilities, which is kind of like where my mind goes with the question. So in my experience, it's helpful to think, how would I act if I knew I was going to die tonight? And what would my priorities be different? What would I be thinking about? So having awareness of death means that we're always living as if today was our last day. So we'd always be doing virtue for our future lives. Not even as if today was our last day, but we know today is our last day. I'm dying tonight. I know that for sure. So living like that. And with awareness of death, we can get a great clarity in our lives. And we know what we have to do. Things come into perspective really well. And that's the point. At any given point in our life, we have to think, would I be doing this or I was going to die today? Would I be acting this way if I knew I was dying tonight? And, you know, would I even care about this if I knew I was dying today? And that's the whole thing, but we'll go through the outline. So the four-part death meditation. Say Chiwa, Mangompe, Ne Mi. Chiwa, Mangompe, Ne Mi. And this means Chiwa again is death. Mangompe is not meditating, and Ne Mi is problems. So this means the problem with not meditating on death, but not thinking about it. These are all the disadvantages. So as we go through these, we can think, you know, do we have any of these in our lives? And if we do, then thinking about death every day is the antidote. So the first one is you don't do dharma. So if we don't do death meditation, then we start to concentrate on the small pleasures of this life, like food, clothes, etc., relationships, sensual pleasures, that sort of thing. Having a nice place to stay, and it doesn't mean trying to get necessarily like the best house or become a millionaire and be well known or that sort of thing. It just means that the main focus of our day is what we can get, what kind of house we want, what kind of job we want, how we can get more money, what we're going to eat, those sorts of things. So our focus becomes that instead of dharma. And the mind, our minds naturally go this way. So again, it doesn't mean that we're trying to be rich and famous, but our whole life is focused on these small worldly things without a greater intention behind it, except that we just want to be comfortable and we want more and more good food, more and more things. I think more and more things is a big challenge in our world. But also the challenge is that as bodhisattvas, what are we supposed to do in like regards to things?
We practice. Oh, or that's like the, well, on a path.
we do need to practice that, and as bodhisattvas, we're supposed to be working for the benefit of all beings. And so bodhisattva would be getting things in order to help other beings. Like, oh, I bet, you know, my good friend could use this. I'm going to get this for them. Or this would be something good to have. Someone might need this someday. Which is a slippery slope, because you have to be keeping that in mind and not just going into, like, I want more, 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 you know, that sort of thing. So it's a little bit tricky. Number two is you don't consider death, but think it will happen to you later. So who thinks that? Everybody? We delay undertaking virtue because in our heart we believe death will come to us later and that we can do virtue later. And then if we think it's coming, we can do it later, then it's always later. Later never comes. So we always put it off, put it off, put it off, put it off. And we think that what Jason Coppa says about death doesn't apply to us, and then it's always something in the far future, too. And we really don't know if it is or not. I think, from what I've heard from people who are older than me, you know, maybe in their 70s or something like that, like, it gets to be more real at that age. But we don't know. We might not even make it to that age. Like, I could die tonight on my way home from class. It's possible. Who knows? And Geshe Michael tells this story. There was this really strong, healthy, good Dharma student. And he helped to build Vajrapani, and he was doing some work on a roof there. And he fell off, and he hit his jugular on a nail. And so his wife came and was, like, holding him in her arms, and then they were saying mantras, and then he died, and that was it. So he's strong, healthy, and right then, he's gone. So it can happen, it can really happen at any time. So we can think everything's in the future. Like, next course I'll do the homeworks and the meditations, and next month I'll practice more, and I'll do all these things later. And the reason we do this is because we aren't meditating on death. And if we were really meditating on death, we wouldn't be waiting if we thought that we were going to die tonight. And even, I just tried this, because this hasn't been a big practice for me so far, but I just tried it, like, one day. Even, I think, like, I remember for, like, an afternoon, and it did motivate me to practice more. Because I was thinking about, okay, I'm going to die tonight. Do I want to watch the show? Which it could, there could be some really helpful message in it. Or do I want to, I forgot what it was, maybe work on homework or prepare for class. And so I prepared for class, and, like, I did extra Dharma study. And I believe I did an extra meditation. So it does change it. And if just that little bit changes it like that, imagine if it was something that we contemplated even more often. So I don't think it takes that big of an effort either. And then Master Shanti Deva, he gives this example of being, like, someone tells us to walk across the room with a pot of boiling oil on our head and not to spill a single drop. And mostly we can't do it. But if someone says, walk across the room with this boiling pot of oil in your head, and if you spill a single drop, I'm going to slit your throat with this knife, then we can do it. Like, all of us could do it. So in that sense, it's the idea that we can do amazing things when death is involved, when it's like a huge motivator for our practice and for our life, too. And then the third one third disadvantage of not cultivating death awareness is we do practice, but for reputation only. And this doesn't mean that we're obsessed with being famous or something like that. But when we come down from the direct perception of emptiness, there's a realization of ego. And we realize that there's no action that we ever undertake that's not motivated by some selfishness. There's just not. And our natural motivation is from self-interest and self-concern. So when we sit in an amazing Dharma class, usually we're thinking, like, that other person's wrong. I could teach this better. I'm such a better practitioner than the other students. Just, you know, those sorts of thoughts. That's usually the types of thoughts that we have. But this becomes even more accentuated if we don't do death meditation. Which I have those thoughts in classes, and I used to have them a lot more, but I still have them. And it'd be so great if I didn't have them anymore. And if, from what Geshe Michael's saying, or, you know, what he's relaying to us from Jason Papa, is that if we do death meditation, then those thoughts aren't accentuated anymore. Which would be really cool, because also then we'd be more open to learning. And then the fourth disadvantage of not cultivating death awareness is we practice but with no enthusiasm. So without death meditation, we just do a rote practice, like it's just routine. Going through the motions, not really paying attention, and then eventually we'll just drop the practice. And we all have this kind of pollution all the time, but it's worse if we don't do death meditation. Either we don't practice at all, or even if we do, it's rote, and then we're thinking about what we're going to have for breakfast or some other topic that comes up in our minds. And then sooner or later we give it up and we just drop our practice. And I haven't seen this as much, but Geshe Michael talks about this in this class, that I guess he used to interview people to be able to join these classes. I don't know what for. I'm guessing just to see, like, what their interest was, maybe their study level. But he used to interview them, and he said that a lot of people had tantric initiations, and they just dropped them after a while. So if we were meditating on death, we would do really sweet tantric meditations, or I think just regular meditations, and that's the difference. It's not artificial. It's not that we pretend we're going to die tonight, it's that we know we're going to die tonight. And there's some resistance in all of us when I say that. It's not that we could, it's that we're going to. So we just decide, huh?
Yeah, it's happening.
We just decide that we're going to die tonight, and then we decide what we're going to do. And if we haven't tried practicing this way before, what's the harm in at least trying it? Because there is, like, I sense some resistance in myself. Do you guys sense it when I say that?
Well, when I think about that, I just think, well, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to die. There's nothing I need to do. So, okay, I'll see you later, or bye-bye.
Do you think, is that what comes up for you to do when you think, I'm dying tonight?
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying a little bit ago. That's kind of what comes up for me. But it,
we have meditation for sure, but not doing anything like in the world.
Yeah.
Probably stay at home. Meditation for sure.
Yeah, which maybe isn't all that helpful, because if you don't die tonight, then you might have lost your job by then.
Yeah, he never went out anymore. I haven't seen him.
Yep. So that's how I kind of see it as helpful, to think not what would I do, but how would I be doing the things that I'm doing? Like, I'm dying tonight. How would I be acting right now, you know, while I'm at work, or while I'm in class, or while I'm talking to this person? Yeah, because I get that sense too.
Yeah, maybe we're taking it just like too literal. Like, I mean, I'm gonna die in an hour, but there's much I can do.
Yeah, right.
But let's say when you're gonna die, like in 3 months, then I would think to you, well, okay, I have time to do it. You know, I need to get an insurance for my family.
Well, maybe like over this next week, split it up, try, like, I'm going to die tonight, try that for a few days, and then try the 3 months, see how it works for you. I'll try the, I'm going to die tonight.
But I understand the, maybe not,
tonight.
Maybe if I really want to, like, okay, that's it, right? Yeah.
So, when you're usually thinking, do you just tell yourself, and then you go into like meditation and you're trying to really imagine it? Because I've been through like the death meditation. Do you have to do that, or like can you?
No, this one's more talking about as you're going through your day. We will get to that one too, to that train of thought, or the, you know, the thought process. But this one's more like as you're doing everything through your day, just reminding yourself, I'm going to die tonight. I'm going to die tonight. How do I act right now, knowing I'm going to die tonight? Yeah. And then we can report back next week. So that's how this, Geshe Michael talks about this too, which I find it really helpful to hear this. But so this is how we must practice. And it's not that I really think that anyone's going to go do it tonight necessarily. Maybe we do, but after a while it'll dawn on us and then it'll sink in. And there's a process in Tibetan Buddhism where we have to have a lot of classroom hours, and there's not any getting around it. And we hear what's being said, and we understand it intellectually, but it doesn't sink in or become reality for a long time. And if, at the same time, if we don't hear it and we don't come to class, then it'll never dawn on us. So it will dawn on us eventually if we're in class, but not necessarily immediately. But if we try it just a little, there's this huge clarity that happens in our life, and we get a clear awareness, which was my experience. And I think we can all practice it every day. I think we can remember for a week. And we'll know when we're wasting our life by doing this practice. But when we decide we're going to die tonight, then our life will change. And then we know exactly what we have to do. And it's really comforting, because then we just do the right thing. There's no question. Okay, and then the fifth disadvantage of not cultivating death awareness is we get a lot deeper into this life. Like, we get more and more stuck and entrenched.
Okay.
So if we see, if we look at all the 20-year-olds and the 16-year-olds and everyone who's pretty young, they're less attached to this life than we are as we get a little bit older. And as we get older, we get more entrenched and we get more invested. So if we aren't doing death meditation, then we're not going to be keeping our practice pure. So by not doing death meditation, we get more and more invested and entrenched in this life. So we need, as we get older and, you know, more entangled in it, we need all of these, this sort of lifestyle, money, activities. We need certain kinds of food that we have to have that we get accustomed to, and we become more attached to it. And you can see this in, you know, like in your 20s. I remember I ate like anything. In my 20s, I ate like anything. I didn't really care. I just, you know, I ate whatever.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And it wasn't a big deal.
I still do it, but I feel guilty.
Now I have like allergies, and I have certain things that make me feel good, certain things I don't like, and I have to have things set up a particular way, and I have to have like my room and my house a certain way to be comfortable. And when I was younger, it was just like, it just wasn't that big of a deal. So by not meditating on death, we get more and more entrenched in those things. And the things that weren't important at all when we were younger, we have to have them now. And then we get in the habit of protecting them at the expense of other people and lying to get them.
And then you have kids and you become your parents?
Okay, and then the last one. Last disadvantage is we have intense regret at death that our life was wasted, which probably sucks probably the worst out of those. I mean, none of them are good, but...
That should be like a really bad case.
Oh, yeah.
When you are like passing away and, oh my God, I didn't do it.
Yeah. And there are stories in the scripture where people get this terror at the time of death or intense regret about how they spent their life and that they didn't do their practice. And from what Geshe-la said, there are people, even Dharma students, who will tell you they didn't have time to do this, you know, this sort of whatever part of their practice they wanted to do. And they meant to do it, but they didn't get it done. And they're sorry for how they lived their life. And basically the thing is that they didn't change their heart or their nature or character, which is what practice does. And then this feeling is intensified at death. And there will be a point where we're not able to meditate anymore, where our body will be in too much pain, you know, our bones will hurt, and then we'll feel really regretful and really dumb because we didn't get it done when we could have. And then we wasted that time. And probably we're not going to remember what we wasted it on, just whatever, watching another TV show or shopping online or looking at Facebook or, you know, something like that. So if we're doing death meditation, this doesn't happen. So that's the bad news. We don't want to be one of those Dharma students who wasted their life and said, my teachers were telling me to do this for decades and I didn't do it. So if we just get in the habit of living this way all the time and remembering death, then we'll see results. Just remembering that we're going to die tonight. And then, this one is Pei Chiwa Gompei Penyun.
Chiwa Gompei
Penyun. Chiwa Gompei Penyun.
Chiwa Gompei Penyun.
So Chiwa is what?
Bed.
Yep. Gompei is
meditation.
Yep. And then Penyun is venice. Yep. So these are now the advantages of cultivating the awareness of death, which is really cool. These are really cool. The first one is that our practice is pure. So we're doing it for the right reasons and not for others' approval. We practice more and we might lose a few friends when we get started, but what we gain is precious and we know that we did the right thing. We don't have any regret. The most common reaction is that you actually start to practice better. And we don't mind if people ask us to do things and we don't do them. So our boss asks us to come in early, but we say no because we're meditating. We have things that we have to do. And number two is our practice gains power. We'll go through this and then we'll take a break. Well, I don't know if we'll get through all of them, but... So if we felt we were going to die, we get serious and we concentrate hard and have a forceful practice. So that's the power. So when we sit down to meditate, we're thinking, this is the last meditation before I die. This is my last meditation I'm ever going to be able to do in this life. So if someone said you have to have that visualization of your lama really well because you're dying tonight, we could do it then. As opposed to kind of like the lazy way that we try to focus because we think that we're going to have more and more time to do it. If we knew this was the last day that we had, we could do it then. And then with that thought in our mind, there's some sort of base level reaction where something comes up in our mind and it's powerful and our visualization becomes extremely clear. And that one's a good reaction. Like the visual, if we're talking about visualizing the lama, there's something when we think about, I'm dying, this is the last meditation I'm going to do, I'm dying today. There's something that comes up that makes the visualization really clear and really bright. And this one's a good reaction. And we should be able to get to this point now if we meditate on death. And then the third one is it helps us get started. So if we know that we need to meditate daily, but we haven't been able to, then meditating on death helps us get started. It motivates us to give up something else that we were doing and practice instead.
Any death meditation?
Specifically here, we're talking about the thinking, like, as we're going through our life, as we're going through our day, I'm going to die tonight. So I don't know that it has to specifically be I'm going to die tonight, but that's how Geshe Michael's presenting it in this class. But he is referring to continual death meditation throughout our day. He's not talking about seated meditation right now. So with that in mind, our personal practice has to come first before everything else, including Dharma, any Dharma work that we're doing. And Dharma work can almost be more of a distraction than not Dharma work, because we feel like it's more important, you know? But we have to do our personal practice first and make that a priority. Okay, well, you want to take a break now?
Yeah, this is fine. I was going to ask you, this really just came up in my mind. Secondly, Buddha was, what religion was really practicing at that point when he was a prince?
When he was a prince?
Yeah. Yeah, before he, you know, became someone like,
I don't actually know. I would kind of think it was. I don't remember hearing any reference to it in any of the stories. He did after he left, you know, his family home.
No,
I don't remember.
What were, and that 2,500 years ago, what was the religion, or the main religion in India at that point? Just to know what he was practicing, maybe, or what they were practicing at that point.
I don't know.
There are a bunch of different religions too, so.
I don't know. Has Hinduism been around that long? I don't know.
I think it's been around longer.
Yeah. I don't know.
So it's based on that, but it's different. It's a lot different, though.
Buddhism?
Yeah. They have, like, the same, you know, karma and all that.
But not the same flavor of it.
No, and they have other meanings, too. Different things. I'm not really... I don't know anything about Hinduism, but that is spread a little.
Yeah, that's kind of, I just know a little bit from the yoga community mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I don't know. I'm guessing it is if he mentions it, because he's usually right. So no one's practice is always sweet. There's always going to be ups and downs, but maybe on, you know, an upward trajectory. So when we're at the points where our practice is down or low, then it's death meditation that helps to lift us back up. And the examples given are when we have a mild headache, or maybe we're dizzy, or we didn't eat lunch yet and we feel like eating, then death meditation can get us through those things. And then number five is it gets us to the end. So if we have a good practice and we're working on it, we've done really well, we're practicing, and then we reach a hard spot, maybe we're 75% there, and then we start to fade and go back to our old tendencies, then it's the death meditation that keeps us going to the end. And it's pretty common to get tired and then slack off when you're almost there, and then you end up back at zero. But when we're doing death meditation, it locks it in and we can finish things. So it's like continuing to take antibiotics all the way through the prescription, even though the sickness is gone. Or mostly gone. That's what it's like. And then the sixth one is that we die with satisfaction. So as we near the end of our life, our choices provide us satisfaction, and we know that we spent our life the way that we should and the way that we wanted to. And the older we get, there'll be more vindication that we made the right choices. We choose our practice. So we'll see the wisdom of the choices in our lives and then feel really happy that we chose Dharma activities, which are going to be paying off in the future. And maybe an example is we had a chance to have a really great, some great career, but because we wanted to have time to practice, we didn't take it. And at the time, it's hard, and we have doubts, but then afterwards, there's this intense satisfaction because we did the right thing. And as Geshe Michael is a little older, he says that as we get older, people will come to us and say how smart we were to choose our practice. Every year that we age, we'll feel more and more satisfaction of choosing this sort of life. Because as we get older and older, we'll start to see more and more that all of the material things of this life aren't going to bring us what we want anyways. So it's just a waste. It's just totally a waste of our life. And that when we have this confirmation that we did the right thing, we won't ever regret it, and it'll get better and better and sweeter the older that we get. And the earlier in our lives that we come to the Dharma, the harder it is to spend our life on it, especially when we're younger. But the longer and longer we do, it just gets better and better. Especially if we've tried really hard at our practice. And we're constantly improving or adding small things here and there. And that's how I see my practice is. Like, my meditation practice is just growing over years of time. But also, everything I'm doing now would have been way too much to do at first. But I just add small things when I come across something or when I'm ready to. And so it adds up to a lot. But it doesn't feel like a lot because I've already gotten used to everything else. And then I'm just adding one more small thing. Like some sort of way of looking at things or practices here and there. So you just add on bit by bit, and then eventually your whole life is practice. So especially if we've tried really hard with our practice, even the things that we really messed up in our life, but we had the right motivation and the right intention, even if these things fail, we'll have intense satisfaction because we know that we did the right thing. So, if we look at these are So we're going over the four-part death meditation. That was the first one. Problems of not doing it. And then the second is benefits of doing it. And then the third is what death awareness is and what it isn't. So say Shilo Jitar Kewa.
Shilo Jitar Kewa.
Shilo Jitar Kewa. Okay. So now we're talking about what kind of death awareness are we supposed to cultivate. And so at this point, Jason Papa divides it into the kind of death awareness we are supposed to cultivate and the one that we're not. So what death awareness is and what it isn't. And then there's three subcategories of number three, which is what death awareness is and isn't. So when a person's on their deathbed and they start to panic and they realize they're going to lose contact with everyone they ever cared about permanently, with some people this happens earlier, some later. But depending on how much we care about physical objects, it'll dawn on us that we'll lose all these things. And then what comes up is some sort of jealousy that others are going to have our possessions. And then after that, we realize that we're going to lose our body, the body that we've struggled so hard to take care of, and we've done all these bad deeds to get good things for this body. And we don't know where we're going next or what's going to happen next. On top of this, our thinking processes are disrupted at the time of death. So we lose our memory and our normal thinking process, and everything becomes kind of a hallucination. So it's not just that we don't feel well, but reality becomes a terrible hallucination, and we can't even think clearly about the hallucination because we're in it. And it's mainly terror. Nobody knows that we're going through this process except for us. Everyone else is standing around saying that we've died. So is that terror the death meditation, what we're talking about? No, it's not. That's not it. That process will come by nature. It'll come anyways. But that's not what we're practicing. That's not what death awareness is. So it's not...
I think this is what happened there. Yeah.
It's not paying attention to or trying to recreate panic and terror that we're going to feel at death because of our hallucinations, dissolutions, grasping to everything in this world that we're losing. That's not what it is. So when we ask people who practice... When we ask people why they practice, and they say they want to be more friendly and well-adjusted and care for others, these things are good, but the minimum motivation to be considered a Buddhist practice is doing something to help us after death. So the scope of our practice must extend beyond this life, and to the extent that it's focused on this life, it's not a Buddhist practice. To the extent that we're focused on this life, it's not a Buddhist practice. So what death awareness is learning to focus on the things in this life that'll affect us after we die. So to focus our life on the things that are going to help us after death. And that's the minimum motivation to be a Buddhist.
But the objective is to get a better rebirth, is to get rid of become enlightened. Or why is it so important to be aware of death?
Of what's going to help us? Oh, the minimum motivation to be for the next life? That's like the minimum motivation to be considered a Buddhist.
Okay.
But then for us, our motivation is, you know, hopefully, ultimately, to get out of suffering permanently in this lifetime so we can help everyone else do the same thing. But we're still not, so in a sense, like, we're focused on this lifetime getting out of suffering, but we're not focused on, I need more shoes and better food and, like, a nice house and, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So we're... In a sense, we're focused on something other than this life. Yeah. So, if our practice is focused on this life, it could be some New Age something, but it's not Buddhism. The minimum motive is to want a better rebirth, which we've studied in the different schools of Buddhism. There's the different motivations. And we cycle in and out of the different motivations. But when we're going through our life, we can look at the times when we're just wanting things for this life, and that's not a Buddhist practice. So remembering, like, what am I practicing here? You know, I just want more shoes so that I look better, or something like that. That's not a Buddhist practice. You know, like, thinking, I'm going to get these shoes because it'll be pleasing to other people, and then maybe there'll be some more like dialogue between us, and I can share Dharma with them in some way. That would be more of a Buddhist motivation, so that, you know, so then I can reach full awakening in this life and truly help everyone else. So we can change all those things into a Buddhist motivation, but they're not necessarily on their own. And if we focus too much on the worldly things, they're endless. Like, there's endless things you can do, endless things you can buy, endless shopping, endless restaurants, foods. It's just endless, especially with the internet. There's so many things we can do, so many countries to visit, experiences, all these things. And it can just leave us completely exhausted with no time for practice, no time for retreats. So something that's beyond what we can handle is dangerous. So we don't do it. You know, like, there's a certain amount of worldly things that we can turn into practice, and then once we're beyond our capacity, we're in the danger zone, because then we're just living a secular life. It's not our Buddhist practice. Okay. Any questions? It's pretty dense. What we're going through, I think. I didn't get the sense of that when I was just reviewing it. But it is. There's a lot of information packed in. It feels like a lot to me just, you know, just saying it. So we should have time to get through it, and we'll have time to do a meditation too. Loving it.
Is there a most beneficial? Is there a most beneficial practice that's recommended,
according to Geshe Michael? Like, you mean something that permeates everything? I would say karma and emptiness. That would be my assessment based on like all of his teachings. But I think that's a lot of what the practice boils down to too. Karma, emptiness, and, you know, maybe like the flavor of bodhicitta in there. But there's not, I know there's so many different practices, there's not like one best practice. But you'll hear in different texts that are talking about different practices, you'll hear all of them say, this is the best practice. Because in a sense it is. And it could be the best one for us at different times in our life. But I think like an overarching idea, I've heard Ami say many times that bodhicitta is the greatest protection that we can have. So whatever we're doing, whenever we're feeling like lost or in a practice or even in our life, remembering bodhicitta, that's going to be the biggest protection. And then I'd say basically karma and emptiness. Like remembering that in all things.
Again, what's the definition of bodhicitta?
Do you know, Cheryl?
The wish to be enlightened, to benefit all beings, and help them be enlightened.
Yep. And then if you want, like, more of the... So if you were thinking of it more in, like, the Chandra view, or even more Mahayana, in this lifetime to do that. But technically, that's the definition. Yeah. Okay. So now we're on number 4, which is how to develop death awareness. 3 steps. Okay. Yeah, okay. The first one is death is certain. Say Nepar Chiwa.
Nepar Chiwa.
Nepar Chiwa.
Nepar Chiwa.
So Nepar is certain. Chiwa is death. So this means death is certain. We are going to die, period. Number 2, the time of death is uncertain. Say namchi ma neha.
Namchi ma
neha. The time of death is uncertain. We know we're going to die for sure. For sure we're going to die. So if there's any doubt in your mind, for sure we're all going to die.
I still have my doubts.
I think we all do.
Yeah.
And we have no idea when we're going to die. We think we know. We think it's somewhere far in the future that's never, not going to come. But we have no idea. We don't know. We don't know if we're going to live to be old. We don't know if we're going to die tomorrow, in 3 days, today, in 50 years. We have no idea. And then number 3, when we do die, nothing will help us but Dharma. Say, Shuma Tokmi Pen.
Shuma Tokmi Pen.
Shuma Tokmi Pen. So that's the direct translation. Dharma except for doesn't help. So when we die, nothing will help us but Dharma. The only thing that we can bring with us beyond death is our mind and what's in it. And what's in our mind is based on what we thought, did, and said. And there's nothing else that's going to go with us. So we don't need to worry about those other things. Definitely not as much as we do. Only our karmic seeds are going to go with us. We're not choosing. They have to go with us. They're going to go with us for sure. So in that way, Dharma is the only thing that can help us. Okay, this is the last slide. So we're not going to get through all of it tonight. There's 3 main points, but we're just going to go over the first one. So there's 3 main points and then 9 sub-points of death awareness. I really like these, actually. The first one, so these are what we went over on the last slide. Number 1, death is certain. And then the sub-point A, nothing can stop it. It's certain, and nothing can stop it. When our time comes, we will go. There's no power on the planet that can stop it. We can't hide somewhere, nothing like that. Our families can be hanging onto our bodies, wanting us to stay. It doesn't matter. We'll still go. It doesn't matter how much money we have, how much power we have. When it's time to die, that's it. Subpoint B, we can't add any time onto our lives. With each breath that we take, we're closer and closer to death. So our life here is finite. There will be an end to it. Each activity brings us closer to death. The number of breaths that we have to take in this lifetime are fixed. So each time we take one breath, that's one less breath we have before we die. And there's only so many times that we can meet friends and family and the people that we care about. So every time we see them, it's one time closer to never seeing them again. So there will be a time where we will see everyone for the last time. And it's like every moment it's leaking out, so we have to use it wisely. So if we're with people and we think this could be the last time I will ever see them, or if we're practicing, I'm going to die tonight, this is the last time I'm going to see these people. Ever. Like, we'll be reborn, but we're not going to be the same as we are. So the people we see in this life, that's the last time we'll see them.
The last time I will see the ego.
And then sub point C, we really have no time to practice even while we are alive. I notice this the longer I'm alive. Even if we choose to practice, the day flies by and we have no time left for practice. Even on retreat, it's amazing how little time we have. And I used to hear Lama Mi talk about this, and I was like, I feel like I have time.
I love procrastinating. I don't love it, but I do it.
Yeah. Yeah, the days fly by. There's so much to do. There's not enough time to do it. There's always more things to do. We're never going to get everything done. So we have to just practice whenever we can. If we keep putting it off, we'll put it off forever. There's always going to be something else to do. So basically, we have about a half hour, maybe an hour, to practice per day. So we devote about 2% of our time to practice. And if you're a really special kind of person, maybe you have 45 minutes in the morning and an hour in the evening, and that's it. But we spend so much time on useless things. So even if we decide we're going to devote our whole lives to the Dharma and only the Dharma, we still don't have any time to practice. Even if we really want to practice, we don't have the time. We have to cut out the time that we're distracted and upset, and we don't feel well, you know, all these different things come up. So if you practice half an hour a day, you're really lucky. So we have to change this somehow. And it doesn't mean that we quit our jobs and become reliant on other people and take their resources. So we do have to work. And it's not impossible in this country to do it. We can all do it. Usually when we say we can't do it, we're just making excuses. We can all make the time. It's just challenging. And we can all reach the full goal in this life too. But we have to do it. We have to make the time, because if we don't, it'll just be taken up by everything else. And then we're going to continue next class with everything else.
I was scared. I think they needed this whole thing. Right now.
That's good. I felt like that when I was listening to it again. I was like, oh, this class is really good.
Yeah.
So let me see what the meditation is in the homework. Maybe we'll do that one. I can't believe next week's already the last week. This one went by fast. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I keep smelling the Can you smell the pastries? I think Sugar Plum has their bakery.
Yeah.
You can smell the baking. Okay. Oh, we'll do a meditation. I don't know, is it too loud with the fan? I don't know if it's too hot without it. It's gotten cooler.
I'm
not And we're in the dark.
I can feel the wind coming in. It's cool.
Yeah, it does. It feels like it's out there. Okay. Oh yeah. Okay, we have time. So, we'll start our meditation. So you can close the eyes, or you can leave them open. It's up to you. Just soften your body, doing a quick scan down the body. And just melting away tension wherever you find it. Do an analytical meditation. On the 3 points that we went over. So 3 steps on how to develop death awareness. And the first one is death is certain. And so hold that in your mind and think about it from all different angles. Is death certain? Do I have some doubt that it is? Is that doubt realistic? Is it true? Just digging deeper and deeper and deeper. Taking a few minutes on your own to look at this idea, death is certain. coming to point number two. The time of death is uncertain. And looking that over from all different angles, looking at any doubts that we have about this idea, and just going deeper and deeper into this. And then if we come to some realization, then single-pointedly holding that realization, that becomes the object. So do I believe that the time of death is uncertain? Is that true? What do I see around me? Coming to point number three, the third step. When you die, nothing helps but Dharma. So the only thing that we bring with us beyond this life is our mind, which are the things that we've thought, said, and done. Thinking about that, looking at that from all angles. Is it true that nothing else will help me but the Dharma? What are the things I think will help me? Just to summarize, three steps, the 3 points. Circling back, number one, death is certain. Number two, the time of death is uncertain. Number three, when we die, nothing will help us but Dharma. Hear those three, noticing what quality of mind or awareness or energy comes up. Feel maybe some cool brightness, clarity of mind, or maybe something else. Ending our meditation and our class with the intention that we're going to practice this next week, thinking, I will die tonight, doing an experiment, seeing how that affects our life, how we act, things we say and do. Reaching full awakening in this life for the sake of every living being. Sashi Puki Chukshin Yato Chan Vira Vinshi Yante Genpahi Sange Shingu Mekte Uwahi Joku Namda Shingla Chupasho Miram Guru Adha Mandalakam Nirtayami Gewa Di Gewoku Sunam Yeshe Soksokshin Sunam Yeshe Lejumwe Tampa